Should the National Football League consider banning the tush push league-wide? That is a question that is being submitted to the National Football League, courtesy of a, quote, anonymous team or an unidentified.
It's the Packers.
It's the Packers. Diana Rossini put on Twitter that the Packers are this unidentified team in the National Football League. Now, do we know that for certain? I don't know. But when Diana Rossini says it, I have a tendency to. She's a pretty reputable source for this sort of information. But it brings about an interesting conversation, one that we've had over the last few years, and one that when I was looking at Twitter this afternoon, Chris, I saw you put your opinion up on it and realized that you and I disagree on this sentiment. So I kind of wanted to introduce this as a topic. The tush push, banned or should it be allowed in the NFL?
I think you should never legislate strategy out of sports. If there is no empirical evidence that there's any danger, any extra added danger to the game for the players, I think you keep it in. I think that a lot of times, like the kickoff changes in football, I completely understand. We saw some really devastating injuries, not only in the NFL, but in college as well, with players getting like severe spinal injuries and whatnot. We obviously know what happened with like Eric LeGrand and whatnot when he was at Rutgers. But like, there's no data out there that proves emphatically that it's a dangerous play, and I think a lot of people dislike it, not because of it being seemingly dangerous, but because it's not a very exciting play. And I understand if you don't like it that it's not an exciting play, but I don't think that means you need to ban it. So to me, it's like I think a lot of people don't like it because it's a play that if you execute it very well, it kind of makes your strategy for your offense kind of simplistic and easy. But at the same time, it's like if it works, it works. And I think that the point of sports is to find strategy that allows you to beat your opponent consistently. Mm. And if you do that, if you find a way to do that, I don't think we should take that out the game unless it's a situation where it is too dangerous for us to have that.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe not too dangerous, although there have been instances of it. If you remember, like in the Super Bowl, you remember Chris Jones tried to get a little bit strange with it, right? And he ended up getting his neck worked
football,
on.
Though.
That's football, and I agree.
I mean, he also was hurt in the game 2 weeks earlier when he had the calf injury or whatever. So, like, if we're going to do that, I mean, let's ban whatever play he had where he injured his calf. Like,
yeah, for me, I am a proponent of banning the rule in the sense that a quarterback sneak is perfectly legal. This is not a quarterback sneak. What I believe makes this play illegal is because when you line up Dallas Goedert and another Eagles tight end and Saquon Barkley back there or the Shipley kid, the backup running back for the Eagles, and they begin to then use the push of this tush push organization, that's technically an illegal play in the National Football League. Does it happen? Yeah, of course it happens in the National Football League, but it's not designed in that manner. When it happens throughout the pace of play, that's one thing. When it's a play 5-6 yards downfield and a running back gets stopped and offensive linemen come in late to try to push the pile, that's one thing. But to design a play deliberately for the intention of pushing the pile, that doesn't feel right in my sense. If the offensive line for the Eagles or whoever wants to line themselves up in that way that the Eagles do, where the offensive linemen have their heads down and butts completely up to try to, you know, submarine themselves into creating a pile for Hurts to kind of go over the top of, that's one thing. And that's a quarterback sneak by all intents and purposes. The tush push aspect of it is what I deem to be wrong in that sense, because by definition of the rule in the National Football League, it is illegal. So why is it being allowed as a direct play design versus something that just naturally occurs throughout 60 minutes of play in the open field when a running back has his momentum stopped?
Well, then just ban all pushing then. Like, don't just ban the tush push. Ban whenever there is that scrum there in the middle of the field when the running back is wrapped up and then the linemen come. Ban that too, because that would be illegal based on what the rule that you are stating there. Let's ban that too. But I don't think we should ban that because I think that is a part of the game.
And I don't I don't entirely disagree with
and
you.
And I don't think it's unfair. Like, that's my thing, is like, we have to understand when a rule is fair versus unfair.
Yeah.
There is nothing unfair about what happens with the tush push.
Because like, everybody has an opportunity to run it.
Right.
And it's not like it works for everybody.
I mean, we saw the Bills try it five times in the AFC Championship game and they succeeded twice.
Right.
Like, it's different if this is something that is unfair. This is not something that's unfair. There's really only one team that has mastered it in the league. And if that's the case, that sounds like a skill issue more than it sounds like an issue of it being something that's unfair.
And that's a fair sentiment to have, no doubt about it. The clarification I was trying to make in terms of when you're pushing the pile in the open field versus the tush push is because in the open field, that's not deliberate. That's not a part of the play design. And so
they coach players to do that.
I understand, like
that linemen are coached. Hey, push if you see your ball carrier and the whistle isn't blown, push him forward. That is something that they're coached on.
Right, but
it's inherently a part. It's not something that is designed ahead of time, but it is something that coached. Hey, if your guy is not, if the play's not blown dead, you push your guy forward if you have the opportunity to. It's a natural part of the play.
I agree.
Just because it's something that is not premeditated, it's something that is a heat of the moment deal. To me, I don't really see a difference in that regard.
I see an incredible amount of difference in that. I see if it happens naturally throughout the course of a play, that's one thing. But to specifically use it as the term you use, premeditated, I like that, the use of the phrase there, to make the play happen, because the offensive line for the Eagles isn't generating any real push in that sense, right? There's some that say that the offensive line is already lined up in an illegal sort of formation and kind of that flying V type pattern, but as long as your helmet is lined up with the hip or waist of the lineman next to you, right? If you're the tackle and your helmet is lined up with the hip of the left guard and the left guard's helmet's lined up with the hip of the center, then by all intents and purposes, it is a legal formation. I don't know. It's a tough thing to judge. For my money, if you want to ban it, fine. If not, fine. I think that it should be, but I'm not heartbroken to see that it isn't. My thing is, right, don't put yourself in that position. I know that that's easier said than done, but by allowing the Eagles to get into a 3rd-and-1 or a 4th-and-1, you do that to yourself. And I don't think the tush push, by all intents and purposes, is winning the Philadelphia Eagles a lot of these football games just because they do it better than everybody else. I think it keeps them in football games, right? The tush push is not why the Eagles beat the Commanders. It's not why the Eagles beat the Chiefs in Super Bowl 59. So I don't know. Yeah, somebody in the text line said natural tush pushing good, forced tush pushing bad.
It's
that
football.
could be incredibly taken out of context
it's
if you
football.
Read that without any prior knowledge of this conversation.
It's football. Like, what are we doing here? Like, my thing is, at the end of the day, it is strategy that is a part of the game. It is not giving anyone an unfair advantage. And at the end, you know what they're going to do. Like, when they line up in that, you know what they're going to do. And not only that, but like, football is a sport that is much heavier on strategy than I think a lot of people want to give it credit for. It is one of the most strategic sports out there. It's a lot more strategic than like football. I mean than like basketball or soccer or baseball. There's so much, every moving part on every single play is detailed and calculated by whoever put that play together, whoever designed the sequence of plays, all of that stuff. Like, every play that the Eagles call is designed so that if they can get into a short yardage situation and succeed in that regard. I don't think that gives them an unfair advantage. To me, it's like, what was it, 2 years ago when they made the changes to the shift in baseball? It hasn't done anything for the game. Like, right now, scoring last year is one of the lowest scoring years that they've had since like the 60s. Like, batting average wise in baseball, like, last year's average batting average was .243. The lowest, that's besides 2 years ago, that was the lowest batting average you had seen in baseball since 1968. It hasn't done anything. We're just changing rules just to change rules. Like I said, I think the tush push, the issue that people have is not with anything safety wise, not with it being unfair. It's because you just don't like the play, because it's not a very sexy play to run when you see the Eagles run it five times a game.
Yeah, it's not incredibly entertaining. Which
yeah, might, I think that's what it comes down to is entertaining. Because it's the same thing with the rule where if you fumble the ball through the past the end zone, it goes out of bounds. It goes to the defense. Like that is that doesn't. For all the advantages that the offense has, the one advantage the defense has, people want that taken away because it's not as exciting. Even though I would argue if an offense fumbles the ball at the back of the end zone, I'd say that's really exciting because now you get a turnover there, and now you basically kind of have that reverse card in Uno, and I think that's very fun to watch. But we have kind of been tricked into thinking that anything that's good for a defense generally isn't very good. And I think in this scenario, the strategy behind what we see with the tush push is something that we should actually celebrate, not try to break down because it isn't sexy.
Yeah, I would be appalled if I was a defender in the National Football League. Now some of the rules I will agree with and advocate for, the defenseless player, the targetings, those sorts of things. I'm sort of up in the air in regards to like the hip drop tackles that were banned by the NFL this year.
I get the hip drop tackles.
I get it, but it's so
tough to legislate.
And
they didn't call it very much this year.
How do you stop your body from doing like that? That's such a hard thing as a defender when you're trying to bring a guy down.
You don't have to tackle a guy that way. I mean, a lot you can do a lot more gang tackling like teams are doing now, but like to me the biggest one was like when they were trying to like the defenseless player rulings and whatnot, when like a receiver or running back is about to take contact and they kind of scrunch their body up and they lower their head to where normally their torso would be and they get hit in the head and they blame the defender for it. Like, I don't think that's the defender's fault. I think that's the fault of the offensive player for lowering their head into a point where they would be hit at. But, like, we've taken so much away from the sport strategically in the first place, from sports in general in the first place.
Yeah.
And I just don't like that. Because I think, like, the only time you make changes like that is when there's a safety concern or when it's severely impeding the entertainment value of the game. And I don't think this severely impedes the entertainment value of the game.
No, if there's one rule in the National Football League that harms the defense that I would love to see changed, it would be the way that we currently enforce by yardage defensive pass interference. I absolutely cannot stand that defensive pass interference is a spot foul over 15 yards.
Yeah, I don't like
that. I absolutely despise the fact that a quarterback can throw an absolute duck. It can be 10 yards underthrown. The receiver comes back to it. DB gets caught in the path, gets thrown for a defensive pass interference, and all of a sudden, that play that he really had no bearing on and did not intentionally make contact with the receiver is all of a sudden a 50-yard gain for the offense. I hate that. It needs to be it's 15 yards. It's a 15-yard penalty for pass interference. Stop making it a spot foul.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't like the spot foul in the NFL. I think it kind of takes away from what a lot of these quarterbacks do because there's incentive now to just chuck it down the field and if you underthrow it, you have a good chance of getting a penalty. I mean, we saw it when the Bills played the Ravens. I mean, there was a play where Josh Allen threw it up to Keon Coleman and Keon Coleman literally just held on to the DB there. And he should have gotten called for OPI, but they called DPI instead because they generally give the offensive player the benefit of the doubt. And I'm not a huge fan of that either. Like I think that too many times they give the offensive player benefit of the doubt when a lot of times they are pushing off, they are holding on to the defender because they know they're not going to make that catch. And so they're playing defense there and trying to see if they can get a foul, and I don't agree with that.
I agree with you on that sentiment wholeheartedly. 913-586-7965 is our number. We got a lot of text messages about this subject of the one an unidentified team, although the reports we're getting is that it's the Green Bay Packers, trying to ban the tush push. We'll read some of your messages when we come back after hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Chris Uno, Cero, it's your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
Talking about rules and rule changes in the National Football League, according to a report earlier today, courtesy of ESPN, One unidentified, although it has now been identified as the Green Bay Packers, according to Diana Rossini, are pushing for the tush push to be banned in the NFL. And we've been talking about that along with some other rules that we may not like across the NFL. And we've gotten a lot of interaction from you guys on our text line, 913-586-7965. It's an interesting one. You know, one person in the text line says it should never have been allowed. It's literally a rugby play where the offensive line is out of position legally and the quarterback is being literally lifted up and carried from behind anyway. There's something to be said for it. Occasionally Hurts ends up off his feet and things get a little bit dicey from there. But we've seen that across the NFL.
I mean, we've seen running backs end up off their feet back in the day when they used to just jump over piles.
Fair point. Somebody else says, I don't like the tush push. It's not fun, right? That goes back to the entertainment side of football.
It feels like most of it is just, it's not fun.
Right, right.
I'm not banning something because it's not fun.
That said, right, the second half of this text from this listener says, that said, not a fan of changing rules to hinder a thing that works. Get better at defending it. And I think that's kind of along the lines of what you were talking about, Chris. In my opinion, the ball needs to be blown dead much sooner than it is instead of allowing all of these scrums to occur. And again, I mean,
it's football.
It's scrums are so hard because, like, at what point does their momentum stop and their forward progress? It's very much in the heat of the moment sort of thing. It's obligatory in a lot of respects. You know, it's a fascinating conversation. Somebody mentioned when Chris Jones lined up in the Super Bowl to stop the tush push, he lined up horizontally. Just curious as to how that would be beneficial at all. And I don't know. Maybe Chris was trying to create more of a space with his body or to fill up more space with his body.
I don't think they know what they were doing.
He was just trying something different because nobody else seems to be making it work.
Yeah.
They did. He ended up having his neck massaged after that play. They said, I don't know if you consider that an injury or a stinger or what. Yeah, he was hurt a little bit banged up by it. No question about it. But we were talking about, Chris and I agreed on the defensive pass interference and about how we both agree that it shouldn't be a spot foul, that it should be a 15-yard penalty like offensive pass interference in that respect and like it is in college football. And some have agreed, some disagree. Someone says, I 100% agree with the defensive pass interference. This is the NFL. You should not have an advantage of just throwing it up sloppily to get a penalty. And I agree. Someone says, if a player gets beat deep, PI in only 15 yards when it could have been a big gain, that person disagrees. They started with nah. Is how they start. If a player gets beat deep, PI, and only 15 yards when it could have been a big gain.
Yeah, but the thing is those guys are just holding anyways. Like, that's what you're seeing anyways is, like, instead of PI, they just hold the guy because it's just a 5-yard penalty anyways. So that's like, you see a lot more holding generally than you see DPI because these guys are just trying, hey, just hold them. Because that's if you get called for that, hey, it resets the chains, but it's only a 5-yard penalty. So, like, these DBs are taught to hold anyways. So that's the reason why you don't see a lot of DPI, because these guys are holding basically the entire time.
Right. Somebody else in the text line, a 913, who I believe might be trolling in this respect, says, but Mahomes' favorite play on third down is DPI.
Yeah, who cares?
Well, factually, you're incorrect. I've got the numbers to back it up. So here's a list of the teams that benefited the most from defensive pass interference calls in the NFL this year. The Cincinnati Bengals and the Los Angeles Rams had 16 defensive pass interference calls in their favor this season. That's the most in the league. Minnesota Vikings and Seattle Seahawks were second in the league with 15. The Giants had 14. The Jets had 13. The Patriots had 13. The Bills had 12. The Commanders had 11. The Kansas City Chiefs only had 9 pass interference calls that they were the beneficiary of in the National Football League this year. Only 9, which is 9th fewest in the National Football League. 9th fewest.
Yeah, you're not convincing nobody that says that.
No,
on the text
and they
line.
Had 9 called against them, as or 10 called against them. So they had more defensive pass interferences go against them than for them this season.
Like, you're not going to convince anybody who believes that with facts. Like, that's just...
I'm aware.
That's just... They're going to believe that because that's what they need to believe in order to be able to cope with the fact that they don't like the Chiefs. So just let them think that. I don't care anymore. I'm not going to go out here and argue with people who blame the refs for the Chiefs being great. If you think the refs are the reason why the Chiefs are great, then that sounds like a you problem. That ain't a me problem. So
somebody just said defensive holding is not an automatic first down. Yes, it absolutely
is. Yes, it is.
In the National
Football
League.
You don't watch
football
if you don't think that it's not an automatic first down.
In the National Football League, it is a 5-yard penalty and an automatic first down.
You should watch more football.
Always. I don't know if that rule is maybe slightly different in college football, although I don't believe it's different in college football either. But I, for certain, 100%, it is an automatic first down.
Yeah, it's a 5-yard penalty, automatic first down. Go watch football.
Going at their necks, Chris.
That's not even that hard. I could have said something worse. But like this part, they put an exclamation point at the end of the text. Like, you couldn't just Google that on your phone and see that defensive holding in the NFL is an automatic first down.
Yes.
Like, it's literally is right there.
Yeah, it's definitely an automatic first down. Oh, so I'm saying it shouldn't be.
You didn't say that in the text.
Okay. I mean, maybe it shouldn't be. I don't know. Yeah, the numbers
actually,
are the
numbers.
It
should be an automatic. I actually think defensive holding is a good penalty.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Because it happens so much, if you don't make it an auto first down, then everybody's just going to do it because it's just 5 yards.
Right.
Because then if it's third and long, teams are just going to, everybody's going to hold.
Yeah. A 5-yard penalty on third and 15.
I would instruct my guys to hold all the time.
Oh, guess what? I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
You're going to have to call it 3 straight downs.
You got
to
catch me, man.
For me to get, for it to be worth your while, you're going to have to throw it 3 times.
I know this. If it's third and 15, I know I'm going to get 2 tries at least on that third down.
I did not play defensive back to the level of these individuals, nowhere close, but I was a corner and a safety from the time I was in 5th and 6th grade up through high school. And if it would have been a 5-yard penalty and not an automatic first, I would have held every play. Are you kidding?
I mean, most of those guys do.
Everybody's going
anyways.
To. I mean, fair point.
Most of those guys do anyways. I mean, it's just a matter of when they call it or not. But yeah, no, if you take away the auto first down on defensive holding, I mean, it's going to happen so much more than it already does, and it happens all the time.
I was 5'9 and 155 pounds, man. I was going to do whatever it took to get me a little bit of a marked advantage on that. Someone says, of all the people I think of on that play, it's Joe Burrow in regards to defensive pass interference. Yeah, I mean, that's the crazy thing is they led the league in defensive pass interference calls in their favor with 16 this year in just 17 games. Meanwhile, the Rams had 16 in their favor as well, but that happened in 19 games. So to have the same number despite playing 2 fewer games is kind of crazy. Although the Bengals did throw the ball a lot this season. You throw the ball a lot more, it's going to balloon your numbers.
And Burrow chucks the ball down the field a lot, too.
Yeah, that's just law of averages.
He's got great receivers, and so sometimes you got to interfere with them so you don't give up the real big play.
I'm just surprised the Giants had 14 defensive pass interference calls in their favor.
Malik Neighbors.
Valid.
He's pretty great.
That's a valid point.
He's pretty great. I don't know how many of those were drawn by him, but yeah, you have a league neighbors. He's pretty damn great.
You raise a good point on that one. Someone says, yeah, the numbers are the numbers, but what's important is when those DPIs were called against the Chiefs.
So
it's selective enforcement now, folks. I mean, come on. Let's please get our heads out of the sand. Get outside of your echo chamber in which you believe the entire league is just benefit. You know, it's rigged for the Chiefs. We're still doing this. We're still doing this. My God, move on. Find something else to complain about. All right. There's so many other things that would be a great use of your time other than believing this massive conspiracy theory in regards to the Chiefs in the NFL. 913-586-7965 is our number. A lot more to get to on tonight's program. We got some college basketball news I want to talk about, a couple of coaching hires that were finalized by the Chiefs today, and Got a little conversation about the NFL Combine. Two high-profile athletes who will not be competing in the Combine. We'll get our thoughts on that, especially from Chris, who I know is a big NFL draft guy. We'll talk about all of that here tonight on After Hours with you till 9 o'clock. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Chris, I want to move on here, but the numbers are just too intriguing. Talking about the banning of the tush push that the Packers are trying to push in the National Football League, talking about, you know, different rule changes and things that we consider possible in the National Football League, such as banning the spot foul for defensive pass interference. And you got a couple of trolls in the text line talking about how the officials are benefiting the Chiefs and whatnot. And, you know, I mentioned some numbers and somebody said, yeah, the numbers are the numbers, but what's important is when those DPIs were called against the Chiefs. So, At one point, late in the season, just before the Christmas Day game against the Steelers, and actually when the season concluded, the Chiefs were actually below the National Football League average in penalties called against opponents on third down. Only like 21 or 22 penalties were called against opponents when the Chiefs were on offense and had a third down throughout the course of the year. So that's below the National Football League average. So that changes things. And according to each team's percentage of first downs gained by penalties, the Chiefs were at about 7%. 7% of their first downs this year were because of penalties, which was in the bottom five of the National Football League. So stop. Just stop. The numbers make you look even more foolish than you already sound. That's all I had to say. We're moving on. Chris, I want to bring you in on this because I know you do a lot of coverage of the NFL draft each and every year. The NFL Combine is preparing to begin here shortly, and a couple of pretty high-profile names in this year's draft class have decided that they will not be going through workouts at the Combine, including Shedeur Sanders, one of the favorites to be the number one overall pick in this draft, along with another one of the favorites, and that is Penn State edge rusher Abdul Carter. What do you make of these two individuals not going through the workouts at the Combine?
So Abdul Carter's got a shoulder injury, so I 100% get that. And also, he has nothing to gain by working out there.
That's exactly my point. What's the benefit to either of these guys competing? Because if they perform well, then yeah, that's where you were slated to go anyway. But if you perform poorly, all you can really do is hurt your draft stock at this point.
Yeah, like Abdul, yeah, I thought middle of the season he was clearly the top defensive player in this class. Shedeur, I mean, I think Cam Ward's a little better than him, but a lot of people, there are people that are kind of, that think he might be the best quarterback in this class. So I mean, I don't think either of the two guys is like a surefire going to be a star quarterback type guy, but I think Shedeur's pretty much got assurances he's going to go top three. Because he was supposed to work out at the Shrine Bowl a few weeks ago, and he pulled out of that but after they did the measurements that Saturday. So he talked to a few teams when he was there before practices started, and then he pulled out. So I think he's probably been assured that, like, hey, somebody's going to take you in the top five. And if that's the point, then you don't need to work out. I mean, the only guys who absolutely need to work out are the guys who are probably second or third round picks, because maybe you can, like, maybe Jackson Dart can get some team to, he can trick some team to drafting him in the first round, or Jalen Milroe can trick some team to draft him in the first round. But like, yeah, like I me and Bink talked about this on the Character Concerns podcast. We just recorded before we came on the air. So that episode just dropped. Wherever you listen to podcasts, please go listen to it, download, subscribe. We'd appreciate that. But like, kind of sucks to see those top prospects not work out, because you do want to see them go out there and perform, because it's really interesting to see the physical side of how great these players are. But at the same time, it's like there's so many other players that have an opportunity to build up their draft stock this coming weekend that, like, it's not a situation where they need to go out of their way to have these players out there working out. Like, if you're top 10, if you're like pretty much assured that you're going to go top 10, you don't need to work out at the combine. There's not a whole lot to be gained there.
It's definitely an unfortunate trend, I would say, that's happening across the National Football League with top prospects not competing in workouts, especially at the quarterback position. Shedeur Sanders not going to be throwing at the combine this year.
He'll do it at the pro day.
Yeah, and that's what's happening a lot nowadays is guys are just pushing it off and doing their pro days. Last year, Caleb Williams didn't throw. Jaden Daniels didn't throw. And neither did Drake May. And ultimately, it didn't hurt their draft stock at all. So, I mean, is it really that hurtful? I think that it's a pretty quick turnaround for some of these guys who had their seasons end in December, right? Or January, if you were competing in the college football playoff, and then a month later, you got to turn around and get ready for the combine, or you skip the combine a couple more weeks from now. Okay, get ready for your pro day, and then you still have a few weeks before the draft. I don't know why the pro day is so soon in the NFL offseason. I feel like you could push the combine back a few weeks, give the players a couple of extra weeks to get themselves right, get healthy, because like a guy like Abdul Carter, who got all the way to the semifinals of the college football playoff, and then a month later, he's got to turn around and be healthy enough to compete at the combine or risk having a bad showing and hurt his draft stock. I just don't think it's a good idea anymore.
He may not have performed at the combine anyways, because like even before they did the college football playoff expansion, you would see like a lot of the top guys pull out of workouts. I mean, we obviously saw that with Marvin Harrison Jr. last year, where the only thing he did was do interviews. He didn't even do medical because he was like, I already know I'm going top five, so what do I need to do? Like, I think more so now than anything, teams are trusting the tape process. They're trusting interviews, not only with the player, but with the people around the player. And I think teams are kind of finding a way to expedite their scouting process to where, like, they don't need to watch the very, very top guys run around in their underwear. Like, they don't need to. Like, you didn't need Marvin Harrison Jr.'s 40 time, because what you saw on tape, you knew that he wasn't, like, the fastest dude, but you saw that he's big, he's got long arms, he's a good route runner, like, you already know what you're getting with him. The 40 time doesn't matter for him.
There's just so much tape out there nowadays, right? You've got the broadcast view. Then you've got the sideline cams. You've got the end zone cams. You've got the all 22. I mean, there's just so many clips and highlight tapes out there nowadays. Social media is a huge factor in the grand scheme of things. And I just feel like it's different now than it used to be. 913-586-7965 is our number. Someone in the text line said, I got to be the old man and say, I don't agree with not showing up to the combine. As a professional, you should go to the combine. And I'll clarify that they are going. Abdul Carter and Shedeur Sanders are going to the combine. They're just not working out. So they will be at the combine in Indianapolis. They will be going through interviews and team meetings and those sorts of things. So they will be at the combine itself. They're just not going to be going through the 40 and the bench press and individual workouts and throwing and that sort of thing.
And a lot of people, I think a lot of people misunderstand what the combine's about. Like, if teams know what you are physically, what you are schematically, what you are talent-wise, then for a lot of these teams, the only thing they're worried about is what do we see in the interview? How do we, like, the only thing Xavier Worthy did was run the 40. That's all he did last year. But you know why the Chiefs drafted him? It wasn't just the 40 time. They actually talked to him pretty extensively at the combine, and they were like, oh, this kid's really smart. He understands not only what he's doing on a play, but why he's doing it on the play and what the concept of the play is. And that's why they drafted him, because they saw that he understood the strategy of the game beyond, I'm just going to run really fast down the field. And that part, and that's the reason why, like, I disagree when people say, oh, you got to show up and work out because, you know, I'm old school and all. Like, look, the most important thing you're going to do at that combine is not run on the field. It's going to be to do the interview and you ace that part. That's the most important thing for those guys. Not the 40 time, not what their time is on the shuttle cones and all of that. It's going to be what you do in that interview room with the team, because that's how they figure out, okay, how smart is this guy? How coachable is this guy? How are they going to integrate into the system from an IQ standpoint, not from a physical standpoint? Like, most of the stuff that they do at the combine really is just for show. A lot of it is just, how athletic is this player? But just because you test really well at the combine doesn't mean you're going to be a good NFL player, because the mental side of it is way more important in the NFL, because all these guys are good athletes.
Yeah, you can have all the physical tools in the world, but if you don't have the mental wherewithal and acuity to compete on a play-by-play basis in the National Football League, especially somebody like a Shadur, especially a quarterback in the National Football League, you can have the most talented arm in the National. You could throw the ball 100 yards if you felt like it. If you can't read a defense and go through pre-snap reads and progressions, it's not going to matter.
I mean, there's a lot of guys in the NFL that can't do that, but
I mean, fair.
but like, the biggest thing is that there's a lot of guys out there that have everybody at the combine, almost all of those guys physically can play in the NFL. Now, how good you're going to play varies, but almost every one of those guys who plays there can physically play. It's just a matter of what's your ceiling. And that's a lot of what they test there, is the ceiling. But there's a lot of guys where you know what their ceiling is athletically just on tape. And if that's the case, what do we need to see you run around for? We just need to figure out if you're a culture fit, if you can understand our scheme, how smart are you as far as understanding your role and what everyone else is doing, and you get that in the interview. You're not going to get that in workouts.
Yeah, for every Xavier Worthy who goes to the combine and impresses and moves his draft stock up and performs very, very well, there's also a John Ross who woos everybody with his combine performance, and then his career never really got off the ground.
There's a lot of workout warriors that show up to the combine. It happens every year. There's a guy or two that isn't really like people are like, okay, this guy, if he has a great showing, maybe he'll move up. And there's always a guy or two that kills it, and then they fly up the boards, and then they tend to get overdrafted.
And then there's a couple of guys that perform really, really poorly, and their draft stock tanks, and they turn into, oh wow, yeah. I mean, like, he turns out the combine didn't matter. He's just a really good player.
Or they fail a drug test like Justin Houston did and end up falling to the third round, even though he was a first round talent. Chiefs draft him, and he turns into a great outside linebacker.
Yeah, Trey Smith. Guy who was a five-star first-round talent. Oh, there's a little
blood
bit of that injury
issues.
Concerned. And yeah. Well, okay.
Sixth round. Okay. He's about to be the highest paid guard in the league.
Ever. Highest paid guard in the history of the National Football League. So it goes both ways. 913-586-7965. We'll take a break, come back, and wrap up hour number two. We're with you until 9 o'clock tonight here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside my producer for tonight's program, Chris Unocero on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
About to hit the end of hour two here on tonight's program, After Hours, on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero. We've got a couple of minutes here. I want to hit on a story out of Major League Baseball today. The Cleveland Guardians have announced that their longtime owner, Lawrence Dolan, has passed away at the age of 94. Dolan became the principal owner, of Cleveland's Major League Baseball team since 2000. The Guardians put out a statement Monday saying he died of natural causes. Dolan was a Cleveland native, born and raised, who purchased the team in 2000 for $320 million with a 75% stake in the organization. He was the longest tenured owner in Cleveland franchise history. His family now takes over. Paul Dolan, his son, took over as the team's primary control person in 2013. So it had been quite a while since he was the principal owner of the organization. Of course, they were the Cleveland Indians for a huge chunk of his tenure after 2000 until they made the name change in 2021. But during that time frame, over the past 24 years since he took ownership, they've won 7 AL Central titles. They've made it to the postseason 9 times and got to the World Series in 2016, where they ultimately lost to the Chicago Cubs. So got a great deal of success during his tenure there, but kind of wanted to pass that story along. Cleveland Guardians owner Lawrence Dolan has passed away at the age of 94. 60 minutes remain here on After Hours tonight. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero with you till 9 o'clock this evening on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5.